Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, April 24th. I'm Ray Graff. Time again to welcome the coin and stamp experts back for another rollicking hour of fun for all you collectors out there. Bob Scott, David Tripp, join us this afternoon. If you're enthusiastic about coins and or stamps, give us a call. 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. Or email the program voxpop@wamc.org, or just call us 800-348-2551. Obsidianal coins. What are they? Well, I don't know. And I'm not sure. We'll find out at 207 or 208. And it's exciting stuff. And perhaps we'll be back after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's Stamps and Coins. Today we welcome back David Tripp, former director of Sotheby's Coin Tapestry and Musical Instrument Departments. He's author of Illegal Tender, Gold Greed, and the Mystery of the Lost 1933 Double Eagle, and a fine art consultant and a cartoonist. Also joining us is Bob Scott. He was a curator to a private collection, senior technical specialist at Christie's, head of the stamp departments at both Sotheby's and Bonhams. He is currently a private consultant whose clients include Sotheby's, for whom he cataloged the world's most valuable stamp. If you have a question about your stamp and or coin collection, give us a call. 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Bob and David, welcome back. How are you guys doing?
I'm fine. Bob's looking a little bit peaked.
Why?
I'm fine as well. It's lovely to be here.
Do you want some of this Monster Energy drink?
No, I don't want any of that Monster Energy
drink.
Both
of our hearts can explode at about 220. It'll be nice.
Yes, my aneurysm will get you before your heart.
Okay, sure. Let's take bets on that.
Well, it's medical Wednesday.
There you go. It's all uphill from here. You know, when I was reading the introduction, I said, you know, if you have a stamp and or coin collection, does the twain ever meet? Do people have both?
Yes.
Really?
Encased postage.
Encased postage.
What does that mean?
Well, there are stamps which are collected by coin collectors because during the Civil War, American Civil War, not the English Civil War.
Right. Being that predated stamps by 200
well,
years.
Well, there is that. But that's a detail bomb.
Right.
We ran short of currency, coins, simply because of the war effort. Had to make cannon and cannonballs and things like that.
Yeah.
So they took small stamps. They took stamps, what, 3 cent, 1 cent?
3 cent,
they were 25.
3 cent, 1 cent, 3 cent, 10 cent. And they would do multiples as well.
And they would do multiples. And they would encase them in this little brass embossed case with a piece of mica over the front so you could see through it. And that passed as currency amongst store owners.
It was the first fiat currency.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Well, no, there was actual real value to it, though, because it was a postage stamp. So you could always take it out and lick it.
Well,
stick it.
Okay.
Which begged the question, why didn't they use stamps instead of just encasing the postage, which was not cheap.
It was advertising, because the places that did this, they embossed the name of the shop that was passing you this as change.
Ah.
So it was a combination of matchbox advertising, basically.
Do people still collect these?
They do, and they're
collected. And they're scarce.
And they're
and
scarce?
They're, some of them are worth very good
Why are
money.
They scarce? I mean, there should be plenty of those, right?
No, they're fragile. They're very fragile. First of all, mica cracks. You know, it's a very, very thin mineral, and it cracks easily.
And stamp collectors would have the stamps out of them.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So they're not quite one, not quite the other. So,
but it is an area in which both coin collectors and stamp collectors are active as a cross area. But there are also people who collected both coins and stamps.
Oh, historically, there have been. I mean, the greatest ever stamp collector was a. He was
passionate.
No mean coin collector.
Okay, how do you get the title greatest stamp collector?
You own everything.
Ah, okay. Well, I see what you mean.
And he really did. His name was Ferrari.
Count.
Count Ferrari. His godmother was Marie Antoinette.
Yeah.
He was, or certainly a relative of, he was basically grew up in, his house was now the, is now the official residence of the Prime Minister of France.
Okay.
It was essentially a palace. One of the biggest art museums was his mother's house. And they built all the railways in Europe.
Oh, okay. So he was doing
He was doing okay.
He bought everything.
And he owned the world's most valuable stamp that Bob cataloged.
Yes, he did. And he kept it as his own personal possession for nearly 50 years.
What happened to his collection at the end?
It was finally, it was of such immense scale that because he died as an Austrian citizen, it was seized by the French government and sold between 1922 and 27, I think, as part of war reparations for the First World War. It was that sort of a big a number.
And so that was the stamp side. The coin side, there was a great collector called Virgil Brandon American, who was an omnivorous collector, and he kept ledgers of everything he bought. And there is a wonderful line in one of his ledgers, you know, sort of number 100,000 purchase.
Yeah.
And it simply says, Ferrari collection, French coins.
Oh.
And this is 1922. And then there's the price he paid. 1922, $120,000.
Okay, that's a lot. What's that in today's money?
More than the three of us make.
Well, if we... if you think the rarest stamp sold for 35,000 francs, which at the time was about 10,000... $10,000, and the last time we sold the stamp, that was for $9 million. So figure a markup of a lot.
A lot. You know what? We're not math wizards. It's pretty clear.
I have my calculator here.
It's basically 10,000 times more.
Wow, that's impressive. Yeah. Bob Scott is here. David Tripp at Stamps and Coins Today. 800-348-2551 is the number. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. And we'll get to all that in just a moment or two. But one of the great things about having these guys on the show, they do all my show prep. And thank you. Wonderful job this time. All right. We mentioned it in the open. What's an obsidianal coin?
Obsidianal coin. As we said before the show, it's the original Bitcoin.
There you go.
It is during when cities were besieged by the bad guys.
Yep.
They were the sieging.
Occasionally good guys besieged.
It could be the sieging. Yes. But regardless, the people under siege still have to pay the troops because troops just don't do it for free. I'm sorry, we don't lay our lives on the money. So there was no mint. There were no coins. They were out of coins. I mean, they were out of probably bread, water, and everything else, but they still had to pay the troops. So what did they do? They cut up the silverware.
Oh, boy. How'd they eat?
Well, they with their hands, obviously. Okay. You know, because, you know, cut up crockery doesn't have a lot of sale value. Although there were coins made out of crockery at
one
point,
that's true.
That's another time.
But you can imagine, you know, they haven't eaten, they don't have much water, the wine's run out, but it's like, oh, so I guess we'll have to get rid of the plates.
Yes, exactly. Last thing on the list, and some of the most interesting ones were made during the English Civil War with Charles I, and they really, the coins themselves look like chopped up bits of silver.
One of us. Cool.
Ray's looking at one, which just, you can see the ridge, so the edge of the plate that was cut is on one of them, and then they stamped it, they weighed them, and then that was how they developed the denomination. There's one that was made like a lozenge, a diamond, and it's got a hole in it, and if you look under it, it's got the royal coat of arms. So this was obviously one of the king's personal service of silver dishes, and they chopped it up and they turned it into coinage.
Well, mercy, that one only starts at 480 pounds.
Well, that's because it's very, very worn and very, very common. On the other hand, the one in your right hand,
yeah,
the real
32,000 pounds.
Yes.
Zoinks.
And it should bring more. It's about the only one known. And as a necessity coin, they were generally melted down after, so they're extremely rare things. It wasn't just in England when Rome was being besieged in 1527, the Pope melted down his private stuff. And they turned that into coins in Rome. In Vienna, they actually made them out of gold.
Wow.
When the Turks were trying to take Vienna in 1529, they held them back and they paid with gold. So,
well, they just had better flatware.
They did have better flatware. I'm sorry. Anyway, so they just chopped up in bits and made them into, and they are fascinating little things because they actually go back to all the way to antiquity. So you can get things. It's a funky way. It's not the same old dead round.
Yeah.
Head of a dead guy.
Yeah.
Looking bored on the obverse and a denomination on the reverse. I mean, these are things that have lived life, and they kind of speak of the history.
And they don't stack.
And they don't fit well on those horrible slabs.
Yeah, and I could not put that in a slot machine.
No.
In any way. Hey, Bob, what's a Z-grill?
Do you really want to know?
1-1000. 2-1000.
Oh, we have to take a break. 800-348-2551. Stand by, kids, and get your decoder rings out, because we'll find out what a Z-grill is after this. High-heeled sneakers. There's Grant Green on WAMC. 800-348-2551. It's the Vox Pop program. We talk to people who know a lot of things, and then we talk to you as well, and sometimes you know things. The number is 800-348-2551. We'll get to your calls in a moment and your emails. But first, Bob, 90 seconds. Tell me what a Z-grill is and why should I care?
Right. A Z-grill is a waffle impression which is stamped onto or rocked into a postage stamp before it is gummed, with the effect that when you try and soak that stamp off an envelope and you pull it off, the stamp disintegrates.
Why would they do that?
To stop people reusing them, essentially. Oh. There were all types of grills. They were all categorized over 100 years ago, 1916, I think, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J. And then at the last minute, there was one because it didn't have... They're made up of, think of a waffle, like little pyramids.
Yeah.
But this was a little pyramid with a flat line across it. It didn't conform, so the guy said, you know, I'll call this a Z-grill.
Ah.
And the Z-grills on the 1 cent, 10 cent, and 12 cent... Oh, sorry, 15 cent are the rarest stamps in U.S. philately.
And so what are...
But how much for the 1 cent coming up?
The 1 cent coming up, they are all coming up. In fact, a complete collection of U.S. stamps is coming up on June 14th in New York.
Yeah.
And it has an example of all of these. The 1 cent is the most famous of all of the Z-grills. Think 3 to 5 million.
Ooh.
The Jenny block that I sold
the inverted
with
Jenny?
David, the inverted Jenny block, we sold for 4.8 million. 3 years ago?
Yep, 3 years.
That was swapped for this stamp.
Oh, really?
In the greatest stamp swap of all time in 2005. So there's only two known. One is in the New York Public Library, and one is in the wild, as they say. There are two of the 15 cents, and there are six of the 10 cents. And they are the rarest stamps. And two of those three we can expect to sell for in excess of $1 million.
That is amazing. You know, it just occurred to me, if you trade two just way valuable items like that, do you have to pay taxes on that, or is it just a straight swap?
Oh, you mean like a like-for-like transaction? I think it's been tried. I'm not sure.
If they seem to be equitable, why? Because it's a swap.
It's fine with me.
Wow.
You know,
maybe you have income tax Thursday and you can have an IRS.
Well, we've already done that. We've already done that.
Followed by go to jail Friday.
You know, let's leave it alone. Let's go to our email bag. And we had one come in early a couple hours ago. This is from Deborah in Great Barrington. Do these coins have value beyond the value of the metal? Please tell me where I can find a proper value. And I showed you the picture. It's It's got a V on it.
It's a Liberty Head nickel. These were made between 1883 and 1916. And there is one, the famous 1913 nickel, which is actually made until 1912. And then the 1913 nickel, my mistake. The 1913 nickel is worth a few million dollars. However, this isn't one. And this is in very, very worn condition and sadly is only worth about a dollar.
Oh, okay. Well, it's something.
It's something. Mm-hmm. It's 20 times face value.
And it's actually made of nickel.
Yes.
Okay. In the old days, nickels were nickel, right?
Right. Nickels now cost, I think they're up to 11 cents to make.
Really? And they're worth 5 cents.
And they're worth 5 cents.
That's ridiculous. That's okay.
And it costs a nickel to make a penny.
Okay.
Oh, it is. I remember when it was 2.1 cents.
Yes, it's gone
up.
Inflation has hit money making.
And how many pennies will we make this year?
Oh, I can't even count how many billion they have already struck.
But it's close to a billion a year.
And No.
$100 million.
It is. I'm going to. We have a moment here, children.
Says who?
Go ahead. Let's see. Let's go to the videotape.
So what are we looking up?
How many pennies they're making in a year?
In 1921. 2021. They made close to 8 billion.
Wow.
Oh, so it was 8 billion.
Yeah, and that's just 1 year. And the year before that, it was 8 billion. And the year before that, it was 7 billion.
At a 4 cent loss a piece.
Right, but they make money on the quarters and the dimes. Okay. But they don't cost as much because they're worth more. So the U.S. Mint is is one of the few bureaus of the United States government that actually shows a profit at the end of every year.
Well, if they get rid of the pennies and
they
the
make
nickels,
a bigger profit.
Yes, indeed.
Right. So they're wasting $400 million a year to create $80 million worth of pennies.
Yes, but they're making it up on the other end.
Wow. This still doesn't make any sense.
Hey, this is not a political show. Let's change
the
subject.
All right, fair enough. We can get into
your tax dollars at work.
Okay, that was my thought. Robert writes in, can you recommend an honest and reliable company for appraisal of various coins handed down in my family? I would recommend recommending more than one. It's not.
No, gosh. I mean, there are so many good companies.
The professional.
There is the American Appraisers Association, and they have a website. And these are people that only do appraisals. And if you go to I think it's American Appraisers Association.
Yeah.
And if you go up and you just type in coins, stamps, they will come up with a series of names. And these people have all been vetted, and they go through a very rigorous process, and they play the game absolutely straight.
Right. And they charge you a rate, it's worth $1 million, I'll charge you 5% or whatever. It should always be done on a fixed rate. What you do afterwards is...
Yeah, exactly. Never, ever trust an appraiser that does it on a percentage because he's working for his own interest, not yours.
Luann writes in, fire-damaged coins. I have coins. They're black and sticky from a house fire. What do I do with them? I have some old silver dollars, quarters, walking liberties, etc. That's from Luann in New Paltz.
Well, for the pennies, take them to spend them. Okay. Is the bottom line.
Clean them as well as you can.
They don't have to be pretty to be spent.
Okay.
As for the other things, find a local coin dealer and take them in.
But will there be any value if they're black and sticky?
No. I mean, there's not. If they were collectible coins and they have been that badly darned, there's probably no way to seriously bring them back.
But if they're silver dollars, you get the silver.
But if they're silver dollars, you still get the silver value. Right. Absolutely.
And you can just wash them if they're done.
Yeah, give them soap and water, see how they come up. But I know, for example, Johns Hopkins University had a great collection of coins. At one point, portion of the collection was on loan at Princeton. And at Princeton, there was a fire. And a lot of the coins were damaged.
Yeah.
And they came back, and they sit there as just sort of interesting artifacts.
Oh. Stamps, of course, don't have that problem.
No,
with fires.
They burn quite well.
They were very well.
All right, let's go to Marissa in Gansevoort. Marissa, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Marissa.
This is Martha in Gansevoort.
Oh, Martha. Okay.
Okay, hi, Martha.
My son, who's living in Finland now, keeps asking me to look for value in pennies. He says that any copper pennies. I always understood that only the 1943 penny was of any value. Is that true?
No, the 1943 copper penny is a great rarity. It is an error coin. It was not supposed to be made. And so those can be worth, you know, $1 million and up. There are other dates in the Lincoln Cent series that are very collectible and worth more than a penny. 1909 with a mint mark S and the initials of the engraver VDB on the back is one of them. 1914 with a D on it for Denver is another rarity.
Why is that one a rarity?
There were 484,000 made, which is a very small, and they did not survive well.
Okay.
Similarly, 1922 made in Denver, but they were weakly struck, and so you don't see the D on it.
Oh.
So it's a funny little error, and that's another one. So there are various and sundry dates that are, you know, what we call better dates, but those are three of the easy ones to find.
All right, Martha. Hmm.
Oh, well, thank you.
Okay, my pleasure.
Thanks a lot for the call. Let's go to Columbia County and Larry. Hello, Larry.
Hi, how you doing?
Hi, Larry.
Good. Hi. I'm older than my voice would tell you. I'm in my 90s.
Wow,
well, okay.
Good for you.
And back in the 30s, all the kids collected stamps and coins. I have all of the stuff that I bought or collected one way or another. I have sheets and sheets of stamps from World War II.
Mm.
I have a good penny collection.
Yeah.
I'm interested to find out what this stuff is worth.
Do you want to start with the coins?
I'm sorry?
Do you want to start with the coins or the stamps?
Well, I'll start. What?
Fine.
Are your stamps American stamps in sheets?
American. I actually have some mint, unused first stamps from Israel,
yeah,
which a cousin sent me.
Oh, cool.
Okay.
For argument's sake, I have a corner block of the Petah Tikva,
yep,
commemorative. And other stuff. In circulation, and actually, I was given an 1870-something 3-cent piece. The guy thought it was a dime.
Well, that's
a
trime. They are trimes, and they are the same color. And they can be, you know, if it's worn, it's going to be, depending on the date and the mint mark, because we've always gone off of that. But, you know, for it can be worth, you know, a few hundred dollars,
yeah,
or it can be worth a few dollars. It just depends on the condition and, wow, and the date combination.
Yeah.
Right. The stamps, especially the Israel set, you say you have the Petit Tikva. You really want the Dor Ivri, which is the first set from 1948, and you want the top three values. But the crazy thing about that is you not only need the stamp, but you need the selvage, which is the clear blank space that usually occurred on sheets of stamps. It's because how they're collected. The difference is if you've got the top three values, just the stamps, it's a few hundred dollars. If you've got the top three stamps with the selvage with them, it goes up to about $1,500.
Wow.
And
wow.
20 years ago, this was a $5,000 set.
Wow.
But it needs to be absolutely pristine. There's a little money for the Petit Tikva, but it's the one set is the first regular sets, the three top high values, and the postage dues, which were issued at the same time.
Well, Larry, thanks a lot for the call. Appreciate it. 800-348-2551 if you have a stamp or coin question today. For David Tripp at Bob Scott, and we will go to Johnstown now. Chris, you're on.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Hi, Chris.
Hi, Chris.
I have a Civil War token that says on the back, I believe, not my wife. I think these things were minted by states to give to officers or servicemen to catch a train home. Could you please go through the history of that? And is my Civil War token worth anything?
Well, there are Civil War tokens. Now, tell me again what it says on the backside, on the reverse.
I believe it says not my wife's.
Not my wife's. It sounds more... like
temporary.
A store card, a temporary. Yeah, that's not one of the during the Civil War. I mean, these were made in vast quantities. There are two types. They're what we call patriotics, which have Army, Navy on them and the president's face or something like that. And then you get store cards, which are basically advertising. And they advertise little companies, and they basically use them, as we were saying, with encased postage stamps as small change.
Right. And essentially the size of a penny, right?
The size of, yeah, exactly.
Size and shape. Of a penny. Right. What is the size and shape of yours, Chris?
It looks like a penny.
It's like a penny. And apart from the legend, does it have any visual? Does it have a king?
I believe it has. I think it has stars going around the front. And there's a profile of someone. I don't have it with me right
okay.
now.
Okay, because you do get, you know, heads of what would be Liberty. You get Indians' heads.
Right.
You get all sorts of various things. The patriotics will feature, will have something to do with politics.
It strikes me as being far more contemporary. That line is not...
Yeah, that's not a Civil War line. As I say, they were made in vast quantities, probably 50
million. So was this printed by local
these were not official
town government commerce?
They were not made by any governmental official. These were all privately made.
Right. It was a privately
produced. There are mints that made these things, private mints. If you want to send us an image, because that design does not ring a bell in my head, candidly. So if you want to scan it and send us an image, I'll see if I can do a little background and give you more specifics on it.
What's the email?
It's coin and stamp guys, all one word, at Burke.com.
You get that, Chris.
All right. Thanks for your help.
Thanks
a lot. Thank you.
I mean, is everything new? No. Is everything discovered? Or could it be that something
has
slipped through that you have never found before?
Yeah. And don't forget, neither Bob nor I, we've done this a long time, but there's a lot of stuff we've never seen.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I can honestly, in many areas, plead absolute ignorance.
Really?
Yes.
I mean, we were talking about...
And I'm thrilled.
Wow. Me too.
We were talking about that Z-Grill stamp. I mean, yeah, lots of money. But there's no real written record of them until 50 years after they were printed.
And plus the fact, if you look at one and look at the more common variety to the naked eye, I was asking Bob before we came in, how do you tell the difference? Bob? Explain how you tell the difference.
The terrifying thing is a little bit like our 1943 penny, because they come as silver, because there's encoded steel, and they come as copper, and the copper ones are valuable.
Right.
But as soon as one sells, it goes crazy. The 85A is unfortunately a very common stamp called a 63. It's a 1 cent blue. It's a regular 1 cent blue.
Yeah.
And as soon as when this stamp sells, it'll make headlines. And anybody that appraises stamps is going to get a call saying, I've got one.
Yeah.
And what it actually has, what you got to do is scribble down some, like we used to do in the old days with a pencil, make a graphite pad,
turn
the stamp over and just gently rub over it, and it makes the grill pop out. You can see it.
That's so interesting. Now, when Larry called, I think it was Larry, he talked about 3 cent pieces. I have never heard of this.
Wait, 3 cent pieces.
And why did they make them?
Because of stamps.
Because the postage rate was 3 cents.
So they made coins
so
that
you
could
have.
So you went to the post office, you wanted to buy a 3 cent stamp. What better way to do it than with a 3 cent coin?
And how long did they make these?
They were made from the 1850s mainly. They were not very popular at the end of the day. They made them in both silver and they made them in nickel.
Yeah, and the little silver ones are cute little coins.
Oh, my gosh, I got, you know, is Has it been known that these will pop up in loose change for people?
No, they don't, because they look
anymore.
They're tiny.
They're tiny little things.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm everybody. This Ray, there's okay. tiny little.
Oh, would you look at that?
They're tiny with a star on them, but they're itty bitty.
And they're not worth that much. Some of them are, obviously. Yeah. The 1854, obviously.
Yeah. But they're itty bitty teeny tinies.
They really look like sort of starving dimes, don't they?
They do.
I mean, they're just. And they generally, the few you see can be worn. They're almost sharp.
Almost,
they can be worn.
And they can be worn so flat you can't see them.
Oh, yeah. So very,
and then
very soft silver.
Then they made them a little bit bigger and made them in nickel. Up until the 1880s, and they look more like a normal coin.
Oh, yeah, look at that.
Time.
Yeah.
But they've all got the big three on them.
Wow, that's all right. Well, we're going to take a break here, and then we'll get back to all of this. It's Stamps and Coins today. David Tripp and Bob Scott join us. 800-348-2551 is the number. VoxPop@WAMC.org. That's the email. VoxPop@WAMC.org. That's the email address, and the number is 800-348-2551. That's the phone number. Yep, that's the Dixie Dregs. Well, one of your favorite bands, right, David? Back in the
absolutely.
Day?
You and I were hanging out, going. We were both 18.
Saw him across the street, man. J.B. Scott's was a great rock club. In fact, this came up last week on the show in another context.
Yeah.
They had so many great bands. U2 played their first American gig here.
No.
I believe so, or early.
And I saw U2 at Portsmouth Polytechnic in 1980.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Well, in one of the videos, their early videos, he's wearing a J.B. Scott's T-shirt. So
it was proof positive.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't go to that show, but I did go to see the Dixie Dregs, who we just heard. This email from Jeffrey. Could you please tell me where I could sell my stamp collection? Lots of books of theme stamps, such as presidents, many others, several large boxes of stamps. All right, now, Jeffrey, I just want you to sit down because now Bob is going to say things that make you sad. Go ahead, Bob.
I mean, honestly, wait till June 14th because we're really taking the temperature of the stamp market. We're going to see what everything is actually worth.
After the Z-Quil goes down?
The easiest.
Well, we hope it doesn't go down.
I mean, to be honest, the easiest way, which the mass is, lay as much out as you can, take some photographs, list them on eBay.
Okay.
Because that's the way you can do it without leaving your seat. If you start driving them around, there's a very good chance you will burn more gas than they are worth.
But
how's
do
that?
A little research, even if it's tedious work.
Always do
right.
research.
Right. And be sensible about it. Most collections are put together by people that knew what they had, and they will generally make up, underline anything that is particularly good. But if it's all bright, multicolored from the 1950s, 60s, 70s, 80s, don't hold your breath.
All right. This is from Gregory. All sale of collectibles are taxed as ordinary income, even swaps.
Well, thank you.
You see? And you didn't even know that. You've been in this business. Have you paid your taxes?
Let's be honest. Pay my taxes.
Okay.
But since Bob and I catalog for auction houses, it's not our problem.
No. There you are.
That is interesting. That is very interesting,
that is
though.
Interesting.
Yes, it is.
That's so
ridiculous.
It's not like, but it's, isn't there with real estate you can do like for like swaps?
Yeah, I got a question.
But I think the IRS, I think I read an article somewhere the IRS was not very happy with that either. So,
no.
What if
I can't
you drive out beyond the coastal limits and then
make the trade?
Swap it.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Then it's probably piracy.
You guys are both getting knocks at your door tonight.
17 miles out, I've done my baseball card trading. Kay writes, I believe pennies are profitable insofar as every penny, every time it is exchanged, like all denominations of currency, are taxable. Another tax thing. Additionally, there are tax earnings for every penny loaned. I think I'm right about this. Never been a stamp or coin collector, but always loved the show regardless. That's from Kay.
Well, that's fair enough, but we're just talking about manufacturing costs versus...
Yes, and the manufacturing problem is you make 8 billion of them and 6 billion of them go into jars in people's houses.
Yeah.
And well, then people they say, do you want your penny back? And a lot of people just say no.
You put it in that little plastic thing at
right.
the...
That's right. I'm sorry. I personally still pick them up off the floor. But
yeah. It's give a penny, take a penny, mint 8 billion pennies. I mean,
Now it's social commentary with Bob Scott. This is nice.
It's a little ludicrous.
Where is your bunker in Montana, by the way?
I have a bunker in Maine, I'll have you
do
know.
You, do yes. you now? Mike writes, my father, who has passed away, used to have a job in the 50s and 60s where he had to collect payment in coins and make change. He kept an eye out for silver quarters, dimes, half dollars, etc. He accumulated small sacks of circulated coins, Mercury dimes, Liberty dollars, etc. He never got around to sorting them or evaluating them. What does one do with such a collection?
Well, that's an easy one. As we've said before, go to the library and get a copy of the Red Book, as we call it, the Guidebook to United States Coins by R.S. Yeoman. It's been in print since 1947. It has a little bit of everything, every U.S. coin ever made, very good guide as to grade and how to tell one grade from the other, and these are retail prices, so the prices that are published are what dealers charge. But it gives you a very good idea of general rarity, and go through and see if you've got a rare coin. But if they're all silver coins, price of silver has been hovering, gosh, it's been up to nearly $25 an ounce, and you're looking at probably 80% silver in a lot of these coins. So by weight alone, there's going to be some money there.
Okay, fair enough. But if you have a big sack of silver coins, odds are there might be one.
There might be. That's the point. And that's the fun of it. It's like archaeology. It's like you digging around in your backyard. It's the idea that there may be something there. It's the ever-present hope.
Yeah.
It keeps you going.
Speaking of, thanks for bringing up the backyard, because we still haven't found that the little treasure I buried last year. And I know about where it is, but man, it's going to take some real work.
Well, the weather's getting right, and it won't be under 5 feet of ice and snow. So okay. it'll make it easier for the metal detector.
And if any of my neighbors are listening, it's really not worth anything. It's just... It's the mystery of it.
That's
very old.
It's discovery.
I do think, I mean, from the people with the bag, if you've got, you know, a 10-pound bag, I mean, theoretically, you've got, what, $4,000 worth of silver?
Yeah.
So at that point, isn't it worth going through it coin by coin to see whether you've got any more?
Well, that's, you know, it's the coins with the premium that give you the chance. I mean, and it doesn't have to be, some coins are worth, let's say, scrap value in really, really super duper beat up condition.
Yeah.
But a little bit better, and there can be a huge, for the same date, the price can double and triple.
But if they're in a bag, chances are they're scraping against each other. Yeah.
No, but unless you're walking around the house and putting it in the back of your pickup, hitting every pothole known to man. Yeah. No, sitting in a closet, they're not jostling together. And you've got to remember that you get all these absolutely mint condition coins. The United States government, every government in the world that makes coins, stores them in bags, and they get moved around a lot. And they still come out looking pretty shiny and nice.
You know, it occurred to me that Bob Scott has done a lot of math on this show.
Yeah, some of it was right, because I definitely got the math. It was 1,000 times.
We're not even checking. We're just saying, Bob, you're such a genius.
Just as well I do.
Bob, if you play darts with Bob, he's got it all added up before he gets...
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I throw the darts and I do the math first and throw the darts later.
All right, let's go to Texas. Texas, what the... Joseph in Longview, are you really in Texas right now, Joseph?
Yes, sir, I am.
Nice to have you on the show.
Thank you. I was calling because, man, I have a lot of coins and stamps, and I don't know what to do with them. I got to get rid of them or sell them. It's kind of hard because I really don't know anything.
Do you know what kind of stamps and coins they are? American, foreign?
American, Chinese, Canada, I have a bunch. I love a lot. I think they're from everywhere.
You got any idea on dates?
Yes, I think my lowest penny I got is like a 1913, I'm thinking, or a 1911.
Well,
I got a bunch of, I got a lot of it. Like I got wheat peas. I got.
Well, as we said to the previous caller, I'd get a copy of the Red Book at the library,
for the coins.
You can go through for the coins and see if they match up and if there's any somewhat rarer and more valuable pieces that way.
And it's a really simple little book.
I've got one in my hand.
It's not very expensive.
No,
hey,
it's,
Joseph, like, there's a date, and David will tell you, but before a certain date, quarters and dimes, they had silver in
1964
them.
And earlier, they've got silver value in them. So by definition, they are going to be worth some money.
Okay.
I even got a silver one. It was a mistake on it. 1964. I think it's 1965.
Mistake?
But yeah, I got a lot of those. I got a silver dime. I got a lot.
What's the mistake?
It's like a line. It's like a line above one of the numbers. You can see the line real good.
Well, it might
makes
be
it look like another number.
Okay, it might be what they call a strike through, where there's a little piece of a piece of metal or something falls between the die and the metal it's being struck, and it sort of strikes.
Are they worth
it.
More?
That's a common error.
Yeah.
And so maybe worth, you know, $5 or $10.
All right, that's cool. Joseph, thanks for the call.
Thank you for the call. Thank you for calling from Texas.
How about that, huh?
That's the furthest we've ever had.
I don't know if our signal reaches that far, so I don't know.
Well, we have the online goes
that's
everywhere,
true.
Doesn't it?
Unless he was pulling our leg. But in which case, either way, I mean, it was...
We'll take it.
He did a fine job. Let's go to Monticello, which I presume is in New York, but one never knows. Jack, you're on.
As the wind rushes through the...
Hello there. Yeah. Hey, Jack. Oh. Jack is skydiving. Hey, hello. Pull the chute.
Hello?
Yeah,
hello?
You're on.
Hi.
Go.
Yeah, I have some 20 silver dollars, and the oldest goes back to 1888. Any idea on the value or where I can sell them?
Well, in terms of the value, it's going to depend specifically of the date. We go back to the Red Book, and they're going to be worth, they're 80% silver. Silver is $25. And so Bob will tell us precisely what the melt value is.
For 10 silver dollars.
Well, yes.
$2.50.
There we go.
It's $25 an ounce, 10 coins, $2.50.
Right. Times 80%.
Okay. 200.
There we go. So at least at $200 in scrap
okay,
value.
Sorry about that.
Is there going to be a test on this show? Because I've had enough.
Exactly. Can we bring calculators?
The idea would be to check the dates and look at the back of the coin, the reverse of the coin, and see if there's a little mint mark below the tail feathers of the eagle, and look generally for a CC, two little C's next to each other for Carson City. Those are generally worth a good premium, generally over $100 a piece.
Okay.
So that's a good start.
All right. Anything else, Jack?
That's it. Thank you very
much.
Okay,
my pleasure.
Thanks, man. Appreciate the call. 800-348-2551. Is the number. It's Stamps and Coins and Remedial Math with Bob Scott and David Tripp. Let's go to Rensselaer. Richard, you're on.
Hi, good afternoon. In the 70s, my father bought us some proof sets from the Mint.
Yep.
Now, I was looking at them recently. Some were in cellophane and some were in hard plastic. The later ones were in hard plastic. But a lot of the coins are tarnished now, and that seems like quite a ripoff that he bought the proof, and now they're tarnished.
No, well, that's called nature and chemical reactions. In coins, we prefer not to call it tarnishing. We call it toning. It sounds a lot better. And there are actually, depending on the pattern of the toning, there are collectors that will pay a premium if the coin has a nice color tone to it. And I would not, however, advise cleaning them, because you will damage whatever value they do have. And that is the first no-no that everybody in coins learns. Do not clean your coins. You have to live with it. The problem is that it depends on where they were stored, how they were stored. If a little air gets in the pocket, silver reacts with the outside.
And a little overall toning can be just lovely, but a big, horrible, it
Blotchy.
Got a little damp and it's sticking to the plastic is no.
Okay, well, then that kills the value anyway. Then you could clean it, right? You're not going to get a lot?
The problem is with proof coins, it's the surfaces of the coin that matter.
Okay.
You can dip them. You know, there's a special coin dealers do it, but you really have to know what you're doing in order to do it properly, because otherwise you'll create more problems and create less value.
Okay, Richard, thanks for the call. Just to play devil's advocate here.
Please.
Dipping does not take a lot of skill, right?
No, but there are types of dips you use, and right. You have to know how to then rinse the coin after it's been dipped, because every time you dip it, it does take a little bit of the surface of the coin off.
Yeah, and how can experts tell?
They look different.
They look different.
They really do?
You really can tell a cleaned coin from an unclean coin, even if it's centuries old. You know, you'll look at an old coin catalog, and it'll say, sometime clean will be the description. And you look at it, and you think, wow, it looks a little bit brassier than the original one would have looked. There's a different color to it once chemicals have had contact with it.
All right, so, Scott in Germantown writes, when I was a kid in the 60s, my grandmother gave me a pile of stamps from a collector friend of hers. I haven't looked at it in ages, but I remember a lot of 1 cent George Washington, some foreign stamps and others, maybe hundreds of them. Some are in books. Needless to say, I did not develop a passion, but are they worth an appraisal? And that's from Scott in Germantown. Hello.
What date exactly?
It doesn't say except that he got it in the 60s from his grandmother, from a collector friend of hers. So,
and
potentially
George Washington with
1 cent.
1 cent. Bob's got a
George Washington.
Brow.
Well, the George Washington 1 cent kind of limits it a little bit because the lower denomination, like the 1 cent Z Grill, we keep going back to that, is a 1 cent Franklin, not Washington, even though Franklin and Washington
they
are
look
the two,
very different.
They do look very different. So we're not talking about, because the 1 cent is, and the classic 1 cent going back to the 1850s, that's Franklin as well. So it's a Washington. It makes it more of a contemporary issue. Yeah. So the answer is maybe, but probably not of any value at all. But his grandmother, assuming if he was a kid then in the 60s, it would be like my grandmother, so born around the first decade of the 20th century.
But given by...
They had means, motive, and opportunity to get good things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the only thing that it would have just meant spending
a little
money.
How about this? Why not send an image to coinandstampguys.com. I mean, coinandstampguys at berk.com, and I will. Bob will see.
It's very easy to do. I could probably. I mean, in 2 minutes. So it's
okay.
I'm happy to do it,
so
but
send,
it's probably going to be fairly low value.
Yeah.
And Bob will rain on your parade.
And Bob will rain on your parade.
Personally.
But one of these days, he will not be raining. He will be sunshine itself.
That'll be great. I hope I'm hosting that day. 1929 penny without a mint letter. This is from Kristen. Wheat designs are on the back. Worth anything?
Unless it's in mint condition, I would not. It's not might buy a couple of lottery tickets, but that's about it.
Well, it's still pretty good.
Well, that's it, yeah.
I mean, it's worth 100 times or more.
Face value.
That's pretty cool. Another person inherited stamps from grandma or grandfather, 1800s to early 1900s. But again, value?
Well, there are no early 1800s. It's mid-1800s to early 1900s, so figure out the dates. The easiest thing is, if you're looking at an album that you've got, is does it, first of all, look at the front. If it says junior, it doesn't actually have spaces for really good stamps. This big collection that's coming up, it's one album of stamps. It is a Scott National album, only every
and
space
is filled.
And the
rough value of the entire collection in that one album?
I'm shooting at 25 to 30 million.
Wowzers. Well, we're done here. I got to say, Bob, your arithmetic skills were off the charts today. You get a gold star for today's show.
Well, as long as nobody was checking with the calculator.
You know what? It's already in the ether now, and if people want to go online to WAMC.org
and check the numbers.
Exactly. Hey, David Tripp, Bob Scott, thanks for being here.
Been a pleasure as ever.
Support comes from Rhinebeck Artist Shop, offering fine artist materials at custom picture framing in Rhinebeck at New Paltz, serving the Hudson Valley for over 45 years. HudsonValleyArtistShops.com. And the Center at Eagle Hill, Hardwick, Mass., presenting female country duo The Wild Card, Saturday, April 27th at 7 p.m. The Center at EagleHill.org for tickets and more information. Well, thanks again to David and Bob for being here. Thank you for listening. Thanks for the calls. Thanks for the emails. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Andrea Leon screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow at 2 p.m., we garden.